Looking for your next go-to smoke shop? Stop scrolling, I've got you. Headshop.com is the number one online smoke shop, already trusted by over 100,000 happy smokers, just like you. They've got it all. Dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, even THCA flower, all in one place. Need a new daily driver? Grab a smooth glass bong or a classic smoking pipe. More of a concentrate fan? Their dab rigs, e-rigs, and wax accessories are designed for smoother, harder-hitting sessions. And yes, they've even got legal THC flower. Best part? Every order ships fast and discreet, which is why thousands of smokers keep coming back. So don't waste time hopping between shops. Shop the best in dab rigs, vaporizers, glass bongs, smoking pipes, and THCA flower right now at headshop.com, the number one online smoke shop. Headshop.com has what you need. Check it out today. Oh, and because you're listening right now, you get 10% off your next order when you use the coupon code HSHOP at checkout. Go to headshop.com now and smoke smarter.
Welcome to season two of Solving JFK, where we'll try to answer the question, who was Lee Harvey Oswald really? To do that, we'll look at Oswald's life growing up, his time in the Marines, his defection to the Soviet Union, and his time in Dallas, New Orleans, and Mexico City. We'll hear from Warren Report defenders and critics about the characters allegedly surrounding Oswald, like Guy Bannister, David Ferry, George de Morenschild, and Ruth Payne, to name a few. In this episode, we start at the beginning of the story. What was Lee Harvey Oswald like as a kid? Are there any inconsistencies in the documentation of Oswald's childhood that raise questions? What can we learn from studying the young Lee Harvey Oswald?
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. Lee Harvey Oswald was born on October 18th, 1939, in New Orleans to Marguerite Clavery Oswald. His father, Robert E. Lee Oswald, died from a heart attack 2 months before Lee was born. Lee had two older brothers, Robert Oswald and his half-brother, John Pick, from Marguerite's first marriage to Edward John Pick. Oswald's mother sent his brothers Robert and John to live at an orphanage when Lee was a baby. She wanted to send Lee, but he was too young to be accepted. So Lee lived with his mom until he was 3 years old. At that time, his mom sent him to the orphanage to live with his brothers on the day after Christmas of 1942. In 1944, 2 years after she had dropped all of her sons off at the orphanage, Marguerite Oswald checked out Lee, Robert, and John from that same orphanage and regained custody of them. She then moved with her three sons from New Orleans to Dallas. The move was because she had started a relationship with Edwin Ekdahl, who lived in Dallas. On May 7th, 1945, Marguerite and Ekdahl were married. In October of 1945, the Ekdahls moved from Dallas to Benbrook, a suburb southwest of Fort Worth. They rented a home on Granbury Road, and this is where we have the first evidentiary anomaly in the background of Lee Harvey Oswald. As a six-year-old, Oswald enrolled in first grade at Benbrook Common School where he attended from October 31st of 1945 until January 15th of 1946. His enrollment form for Benbrook Common School lists Oswald's address while attending Benbrook, when the Warren Report said he lived on Granbury Road, as the Worth Hotel and 7408 Ewing. And while it makes sense that a hotel may be listed as an initial contact location when the Ekdahls first moved into town and were looking for places to live, there's no explanation for how 7408 Ewing could have been written down. And what's really weird is that this 7408 Ewing address isn't just some random address. It's the house that the Oswalds lived in starting in August of 1948, 2 years after Lee was no longer enrolled at Benbrook Common School. Why would a 1945 school contact form list the address for a house Oswald would then go on to live in years later as his 1945 address? Is this just a strange coincidence? It might be, but I don't have a good answer for it. On July 7th, 1947, while she was still married to Edwin Ekdahl, Marguerite Oswald bought a new home at 101 San Saba in Benbrook. Georgia Bell lived next door to Marguerite at 100 San Saba. Bell moved into her home in July of 1947, around the same time when Marguerite bought the house. Bell remembered that Marguerite Oswald had few clothes and did not own a car when she moved in. She got rides to get groceries from another neighbor, Lucille Hubbard. Bell remembered that Hubbard's son played with Lee Oswald around the neighborhood. The Oswalds moved out of 101 San Saba around Thanksgiving of 1947. With San Saba, another question arises about the timeline of the houses that Oswald lived in. If he lived at 101 San Saba from July until November of 1947, then he should have still been attending the nearby Benbrook Common School, only half a mile away. But during the fall of 1947, Oswald actually went to school at Lily B. Clayton Elementary in Fort Worth, more than 10 miles away from 101 San Saba. This is all according to school records. Oswald's half-brother, John Pick, told the Warren Commission that during the entire summer of 1947, the family lived at 1505 8th Avenue in Fort Worth. Pick remembered this because he worked at the nearby Tex Gold ice cream parlor at the time. The house at 1505 8th Avenue was less than half a mile away from Lily B. Clayton Elementary. Now, the proximity of 1505 8th Avenue to Lily B. Clayton Elementary and the ice cream parlor where John Pick worked makes it unclear as to how the Oswalds could have lived at 101 San Saba at the same time during the late summer and fall of 1947. Indeed, the summary of addresses of Oswald in the Warren Commission's CE 1963 doesn't even mention the house at San Saba. It says that Oswald lived at 1505 8th Avenue for all of 1947. The problem is that we have the proof that Marguerite Oswald bought the property at 101 San Saba in the form of the Tarrant County land records and the statement from the next door neighbor, Georgia Bell, and also another neighbor who dealt with Marguerite, Otis Carlton. There's also an FBI report on 101 San Saba that says that Marguerite Oswald occupied 101 San Saba before moving to 3300 Willing. This FBI report was written within 48 hours of the assassination. I wanted to get more clarity about this period of time, so I went to the Warren Commission testimony of Robert Oswald to see what he had to say. Unfortunately, when counsel Albert Jenner began to ask Robert questions about the summer of 1947, Commissioner Alan Dulles asked for an adjournment. When the interview resumed on the record, Jenner began with, Quote, "This brought us through the summer of 1948, I believe," which Robert Oswald confirmed. Of course, this omission of skipping the summer of 1947 doesn't prove anything, but I thought it was worth noting. And for Warren Report critics, it's one more sign there's something strange going on. Marguerite Oswald was not asked about San Saba and didn't mention it during her Warren Commission testimony. John Pick wasn't any help either. He told the Warren Commission, quote, "I don't know nothing about San Saba." On June 15th of 1948, Marguerite's divorce from Ekdahl was finalized. Months earlier, she had caught Ekdahl with his mistress. After the divorce, John Pick and Robert Oswald were sent back to the Chamberlain Hunt Military Academy in Port Gibson, Mississippi. Marguerite and Lee then moved to 3300 Willing Street, which required Oswald to transfer to George Clark Elementary School, where he finished second grade. Oswald then attended Arlington Heights Elementary School for third grade while living at 3300 Willing. We don't know from the record why he switched from George Clark Elementary to Arlington Heights when he didn't move. On September 15th of 1948, Marguerite, Lee, Robert, and John Pick moved into a house at 7408 Ewing. This is the same address that mysteriously appeared on Oswald's first grade records at Benbrook Common School 2 years earlier. The next year, Oswald once again moved to another new school, this time to Ridgely West Elementary for fourth grade. Oswald then had the most consistent stint in his academic career, completing 3 years in a row at Ridgely West Elementary and graduating from sixth grade in May of 1951. In August of 1952, after Robert had already left home for the Marines and John was in the Coast Guard, Marguerite uprooted Lee from Fort Worth to move to New York City. She wanted to see her son John, who was stationed with the Coast Guard there. She also wanted to meet John's new wife and her grandchild. At first, Marguerite and Lee stayed with John, his wife, and their newborn in a tiny Upper East Side apartment. One day during this time period, Pick's wife, Marge, told Oswald to turn the volume down on the TV. Oswald said no and then threatened her with a knife. Then, when Marguerite intervened, 12-year-old Lee punched his mom in the face. After this incident, Marguerite and Lee were asked to move out of the Pick's apartment. And after that, they briefly lived in a one-room basement apartment in the Bronx. Now, there's conflicting evidence in the record about where Oswald went to school for seventh grade when he arrived in New York. Marguerite told the Warren Commission, quote, "I enrolled him in the Lutheran school, which took him approximately an hour or longer by subway to get there. It was quite a distance." But John Pick said, quote, "Mother took him to enroll in this school. I think this is a public school in New York City located on about 89th or 90th Street between 3rd Avenue and 2nd Avenue. Pick told the FBI the same thing that he told the Warren Commission. The closest public school in New York City to the area described by John Pick was the vocational school, PS 66, located at 88th and 1st Avenue. There are no records showing that Oswald attended that school. There are also no records from Trinity Lutheran School in the Bronx showing that he attended there. On one hand, it's hard to believe that someone would have their seventh grader take the subway an hour to and from school each day alone in New York City. But then again, we're talking about a lady who thought it was okay to use an orphanage as a daycare. So who knows? Ultimately, there are no records of Oswald's seventh grade attendance for the month of September 1952. After Marguerite and Lee moved out of John Pick's apartment, they lived at 1455 Sheridan, apartment F in the Bronx. Lee then enrolled at PS 117 in the Bronx on September 30th, 1952. This raises the question of why would Lee move all the way to the Bronx, nearby the Lutheran school that he was supposedly traveling an hour each way to attend, only to then enroll in a different public school once he actually lived nearby. This episode of Solving JFK is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. If you listen to Solving JFK a lot, you know that I like to keep the vibes up. And that's why I'm a fan of federally legal cannabis from Mood.com. It's a brand that uses small organic farms to source its pesticide-free legal weed. You can get 20% off of your first order at Mood.com by using code JFK. My favorite product of theirs is the functional THC gummies. Usually I go with Epic Euphoria, but I also like Magic Mind and the Pure Relief CBD gummies. These legal weed gummies take about 20 minutes to kick in, and you can control the dosage yourself. Unlike the federal government, Mood.com has never sold drugs to fund illegal wars or clandestine missions. Thanks, Mood.com. So try out some of the excellent legal cannabis products from Mood.com and get a 20% discount off of your first order using code JFK. At Public School 117, when he was in seventh grade, Lee Harvey Oswald began to consistently miss large blocks of school days for the first time. He attended only 16 days and missed a whopping 48 days at PS 117. This time missed at school resulted in a truancy hearing on January 14, 1953, where Marguerite was told that she had to take action to get Lee to go to school, or else the Board of Education would. Lee's last day at PS 117 was 2 days later on January 16th. Around that time, Lee and Marguerite moved again to apartment 3C at 325 East 179th Street in the Bronx. Their new apartment was in the PS 44 school district. From January 16th, which was his last day at PS 117, until the end of the school year, Oswald attended this new school, PS 44. But he only went for 16 out of 64 days, or 25% of the time. On April 15th of 1953, a follow-up hearing was held at the Bronx Children's Court regarding Oswald's truancy. Oswald admitted to skipping school and was immediately remanded to Youth House, which is basically like juvenile detention, for 3 weeks of psychiatric observation. During this time at Youth House, we have two more unexplainable discrepancies in the record. First, Marguerite Oswald told the Warren Commission that when Lee was taken into custody for excessive truancy, he was placed in Warwick Home for Boys, which she says was an old home in Brooklyn. But the record reflects that Oswald was actually placed in Youth House, which is in Lower Manhattan. I understand that witnesses forget details, but it sounds like Marguerite is talking about a completely different place. Maybe it's nothing. Second, and more confusing, on April 16th, when Oswald was already detained at Youth House, Officer Felicia Spritzer, who worked out of the Bathgate Avenue station in the Bronx, picked up a young boy and charged him with truancy. The boy was identified as Lee Harvey Oswald. Officer Spritzer then served him with the outstanding warrant for truancy. Of course, this is physically impossible because Oswald was already at Youth House on April 16th. While Oswald was at Youth House, he saw a psychiatrist, Dr. Renatus Hartogs, who diagnosed Oswald with personality pattern disturbance with schizoid features and passive-aggressive tendencies. Despite the diagnosis, Dr. Hartogs did not recommend that Oswald be placed in an institution. In May of 1953, after spending 3 weeks at Youth House, Oswald was released and returned to school at PS 44, where his grades improved for the remainder of the seventh grade school year. On September 14th of 1953, Lee entered the eighth grade at PS 44. On September 24th, Marguerite called Lee's probation officer, John Caro, to tell him that she didn't think it was necessary for Lee to attend the hearing that was scheduled that day because, quote, he had been elected class president and was now well-adjusted. Caro then followed up with the school, who wrote a report on Oswald saying that he, quote, did little work, wouldn't support the flag, and spent most of his time sailing paper airplanes around the room. Ultimately, in hearings on October 29th and November 19th, Judge Dudley Sitcher determined that Oswald was in need of treatment. Marguerite had no intention of allowing Lee to be placed in custody again. She told the court on December 17th that the family was moving to New Jersey. And just like that, Oswald's time in the New York juvenile system was over as soon as he was out of the jurisdiction. In reality, Marguerite and Lee didn't actually move to New Jersey. They went back to New Orleans. According to the Warren Report, Marguerite and Lee Oswald left New York City to return to New Orleans in January of 1954. And as we just discussed, there is a lot of evidence to support the idea that Oswald was in New York City until very early in 54. In addition to all of the children's court hearings in the fall of 1953, we also know that Marguerite and Lee were in New York from Marguerite's employment records. She worked at Lady Orva Hosiery until December 26th of 1953. Also, according to the school health records, Lee was sick at school on January 4th at PS 44, which means that he still had to be in New York then. So there is a very strong record to demonstrate that Oswald stayed in New York until early January of 1954. And that is precisely why it's so strange that there is also evidence of Oswald being in North Dakota in the summer of 1953 for a prolonged period of time, and of Oswald attending Beauregard Junior High School in New Orleans in the fall of 1953, when the evidence points to him being in New York. 12-year-old Henry Temer was staying with his grandma in Stanley, North Dakota for the summer of 1953. According to a December 27, 1963 FBI report, Timmer came forward to the FBI to tell them that he remembered meeting Lee Harvey Oswald that summer when he was riding bikes in the local park with some other kids and saw Oswald there. Oswald introduced himself as Harvey. Timmer said that he hung out with Oswald about six different times that summer. Oswald told the boys that he was a gang member in New York City and talked about gang fights where members would use razor blades in potatoes as weapons. Timmer said that he remembered Oswald because he was the first person he ever met from the big city. He also remembered that Oswald's bike had no chain guard on it, and his pant leg would always get stuck in his bike. Notably, Timmer says that 14-year-old Harvey Oswald talked about communism and showed Timmer a pamphlet about Karl Marx. He even told Timmer once, "Someday, I'm going to kill the president and that will show them." Timmer told his mom about this, and of course, she said that he couldn't play with Oswald anymore. When Timmer saw Oswald's photo in the papers after the assassination, he was certain that it was the same person he had met in Stanley, North Dakota, 10 years earlier. The problem with Timmer's story is that the FBI checked Marguerite Oswald's employment records from Lady Orva Hosiery in New York City, and she worked there continuously from May until December of 1953. There was no pay period where she missed or she was noted as being on vacation. That means that Marguerite and Lee could not have been in North Dakota. So is Timmer just mistaken? Maybe he is. But there's one more piece of evidence that indicates that Oswald may have briefly been in North Dakota in the summer of 1953. Oswald gave an interview to Aline Mosby when he was in Moscow in 1959. She was asking him about his attempted defection to the Soviet Union. Mosby took handwritten notes about where Oswald said he lived during this interview. In the notes, Mosby writes the letters ND after NY when discussing the chronology of where Oswald lived. However, Aline Mosby retyped the notes for the Warren Commission and changed ND to NO for New Orleans. It isn't clear whether this was a typo or it was intentional. The Warren Report's position is that Oswald never lived in North Dakota at any time. Now, there is not a lot of evidence to show that Oswald was actually in New Orleans in the fall of 1953. Still, the one piece of evidence that exists is pretty hard to explain. On page 817 of Warren Commission Volume 22, you'll find Lee Harvey Oswald's 1953-54 school year report card at Beauregard Junior High School. The first line shows the fall semester. It notes that Oswald was there for 89 days. But remember, we know that there is ample evidence that Oswald lived in New York until early January of 1954. He could not have been in New Orleans for 89 days in the fall of 1953. The easiest explanation is that this document must simply be incorrect. But it's a report card for four semesters. It covers the fall of 1953 through the spring of 1955, over 2 years of school. I don't know how someone could get the number of days in the first fall semester wrong in that way, assuming that this was a true and accurate document. The Beauregard Junior High report card showing that Oswald was present for 89 days in the fall of 1953 is an evidentiary anomaly that I can't explain. All of Oswald's original New York juvenile detention records, psychiatric records, and school records disappeared while they were in the custody of the FBI. There are only copies of those documents available now. On top of all of that, all of the Beauregard Junior High records are missing, leaving us with only copies. With all of the evidentiary anomalies in this case, the FBI has opened itself up to claims by Warren Report critics that they altered the copied versions of the documents, given that the FBI keeps losing all of the originals of all of the documents that I just mentioned. Next time on Solving JFK, we'll continue looking at Oswald's time in junior high and high school. Did he attend Stripling Junior High in Fort Worth? And was he really in the Civil Air Patrol with David Ferry when he was a kid? If you heard anything that you believe is out of context, or if you have additional information to offer, you can let us know at solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide citations to the record for any fact that you're relying on. For transcripts, sources, and official podcast merchandise, Visit SolvingJFKPodcast.com.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit SolvingJFKPodcast.com for more information.